This is Devin.
And this is Elmer.
Welcome to the Forum Journey Podcast. Hey guys, welcome to the Forum Journey Podcast. We are here with Cole, as promised from 2 weeks ago. This is Elmer's, he promised this 2 weeks ago and now it's happening. But Cole, thanks for being here. Cole, I think we'll just start off and just tell us who you are and maybe how you know us or how we know you. So share with us who you are.
Yeah, so I'm Cole Meckley. I am the lead pastor at Gather Church here in Centralia. And I don't know, I met you guys just in the community as other leaders in the church, right? I mean, yeah. I think that's where we met along the way, I believe. Yep. So, so Gather founded that 10 years ago, just a little over 10 years ago now. So, yeah, I know, time flies, right? It's kind of crazy. But I don't know, what do you want to know about me? I grew up, you wanted me to start way back there? Does that sound good?
Yeah,
all right.
Because you've got an interesting story.
Yeah, you do. Yeah. I think we all have interesting stories.
Well, but you've kind of done a lot of things.
I have, yeah, I know. It's like, at some point, I was bouncing around, I think, in all kinds of different fun careers. But I grew up in Rochester, so South Thurston County and not far, and Centralia, Chehalis area was the closest of actual some kind of thing like a city or a town, and so it was like the place we would come to on a regular basis. So familiar with the area, love the area, and love the people here. So I originally went to school at CC. I'm kind of old, not that old, but I graduated Rochester in 88, so I'm like 50, almost 51 now in April. So I
for our listeners, not going to look a day over 30.
No, totally. I agree. I
just
got
covered up.
I have more gray hair you do, Cole.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that fair hair, you know, it doesn't show up as much. It blends in with the rest of my hair color. So, but anyway, grew up around the area. Went to school at CC for a couple of years and started a business. Was a car guy, as my background really was in cars.
And, car salesman?
No, hot rod builder.
Ooh,
yeah, built
nice.
Custom cars. Since I started doing that really as a kid when I was 14, 15 years old. And that was kind of my passion, my desire. Just wanted to build hot rods for a living. I ended up going to school over in Central. Started a business actually here in Southern Thurston County then in the, I think it must have been in the 90s, early 90s. And then came back after finishing school and just did that. And up until 2000, that was my career. Had a shop, built hot rods for people all over the country.
Do you know Brian Gilman?
I do. Yeah.
Oh, he's a good,
he's
a good man.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Cool. Muffler guy. We won't talk about his catchphrase from the 90s.
No, we won't.
We'll leave that alone for now. Right?
I forgot about that.
Oh,
that
yeah.
Is awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, now my wheels are turning and I'm...
Oh, we'll talk about it later.
Off the set.
That's right. People are going to be Googling now.
Totally. They're going to want to know.
Oh, yeah. Anyway. Oh, yeah. Brian's a good guy. Did that for a long time. It was fun, you know. It was not necessarily fulfilling in a super deep sense, interestingly. So it was late 90s, 98, 99, when, like, faith, you know, I grew up in the church. Faith became more like an active part of my life. There's a long period of time, well, it felt long then anyway, a decade of running from God, of feeling inadequate. I don't know that, you know, having grown up in the church, having been around the gospel, never really made a lot of sense to me. I kind of felt like the usually way I describe it is my childhood journey with Jesus was thinking that Jesus was like God's mascot and just, I don't know, kind of cheering us in some sense. And then God was like, you know, big bearded man in the sky with a stick, totally disapproving of most of our activities all the time. And anyway, yeah, so that was kind of my, you know, teens, 20s, perspective
that,
of faith.
That could be a podcast by itself, just to try to unpack that for you.
Oh yeah, right? Right, absolutely. Yeah. Oh my goodness sakes. So I don't know, it was like sometime in the late 90s, 98, actually just not far from here too. I had an epiphany moment, just like, I don't know, on the corner of, where are we at? I was on the corner of First and Pearl. And I had this like super huge epiphany. Anyway, we won't go into that right now, but that was pretty pivotal. And understanding like a little more about God's favor and desire and passion and love for us, dedication, his I guess the right word is hesed, his like dedicated love for us. And anyway, that was pretty life transforming. And so from there, it was a matter of what am I going to do with my life now? Enjoyed building hot rods, went through some other difficult times at that point. Decided that I kind of fell in love with biblical languages, and primarily Greek, but I was pretty interested in Hebrew. Confusing, really confusing to me. Greek made a little more sense. So long story short, I ended up deciding to go back to school, downsized my business, ultimately closed it over the period of 3 years. So I went back to school in 2000, got another undergraduate degree, this one in biblical languages and biblical studies, and kind of discerned what I was going to do from there, whether I was going to go back to school beyond that, or whether I was going to go back and build hot rods again with a better understanding of theology and biblical languages, right?
Some languages.
And yeah, so anyway, that was good times. I really had I went to school in Issaquah. Really chose the school I went to, it's Trinity Lutheran, for their language department. And I had some familiarity with the school and knew other people that had gone there. During my 3 years there, I decided that God was calling me to go on to grad school. So we, somewhere along the way, what was that, 2003, somewhere along the way, 2002, I should know this date, I got married.
Oh, I was wondering.
Yeah. And so my wife and I moved to Vancouver, Canada. And so we lived up there for about 3 years. Our oldest son was born up there. And we both studied at Regent College, and I got my MDiv up there. And just really, really pivotal, really transforming time. It was really amazing. I was really found myself drawn to professors who were also like practicing their faith in a, I don't know, how would I put it? Not just in a
practical,
typical, very practical theology. You know, all of the professors that were really in that kind of practical theology category were the ones that were most compelling and interesting to me. Had a lot of experiences downtown east side Vancouver. If you've been down there before, it's like one of the toughest neighborhoods in North America. It's a tough place. And it's beautiful in many ways too. Chinatown's down there, and there's a lot of cultural diversity and a lot of amazing things going on. But it's also a part of Vancouver, Canada that's not policed much. And so a lot of shady stuff going on there on a regular basis. And so anybody that is really down and out spending their time there, it's kind of they congregate the majority of their those who are really poor and stuff, struggling with addiction and such, just into that part of the community. And so it was really altering my understanding of life and my understanding of suffering that people face, and pretty pivotal time. There were some situations going all the way back to my time at Trinity that were that same kind of experience, but that was really transforming. And then I got to know a guy by the name of Bob Ekblad, and he was an adjunct professor for Regent, but he lived at the time in right around Burlington, and has a ministry called Tierra Nueva, New Earth, and the People's Seminary. Highly educated guy and just brilliant, but you would not know it. I mean, he's just rolls up in a flannel shirt and dirty jeans, and he's hanging out with folks that are migrant workers in that area, because there's a lot of migrant workers, advocating for them, trying to defend their cause and understand where they're coming from. And his take on both theology, his take on scripture, his take on how we should be actively involved in our communities was hugely influential for me. Like I saw him as this highly educated, intelligent man who also is like not ivory tower kind of person, but instead getting his hands dirty and advocating for people and really trying to just understand and challenge himself to understand people better. Anyway, so we finished up grad school, came back to the States. I pastored at a church in the Linwood area, and was there for, it was a church I was familiar with, and they'd offered me a position when I was still in grad school before we moved back. And that was great. I met, reconnected with tons of good friends, but I was like pretty dissatisfied with what my day-to-day experience was. And so I have friends that worked with Union Gospel Mission downtown Seattle, Pioneer Square. And so I perused their job listings, and they had a position open for a receptionist job. It was like sitting at the front counter at the downtown Second Avenue Extension facility.
Okay. Like intake?
And it was just like first person you would see when you walk through the door behind a plate glass window or whatever. And it's like, I call up Bill Vandermeer is his name, and he's retired now, but and I'm like, Bill, I've applied for this job. I want this job. And he's like, you don't want that job, Cole? And I'm like, yeah, I do. I want that job. That sounds like a great job. The first person you meet when you walk through the door, he's like, no, you don't want that job. Why would you want that job? I'm like, anyway, so we argue about that a little bit. And they ended up offering me a different position. So then I worked downtown, but I was still pastoring at the church in Linwood. But I mean, honestly, I didn't do a whole lot during the day anyway. Well, everybody that was going to church on Sundays was at work. So it worked out really, I know, right? It worked out really well.
So are you telling me?
No.
Hold on a second. Just a side note, Cole. So what I hear you saying is that people are away from the church more than they're at church.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I mean, in particular, understandings of that, right?
Yeah, totally.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Because
we're an advocate for that, by the way. Just let you know. We recognize that God's at work.
Yep.
At their work.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
let's
exactly.
go find them.
Yeah, right, cool. Exactly. So that was amazing work. Downtown Seattle, Pioneer Square. Worked a few different positions with UGM. And all along this whole journey, God was putting into my mind this growing vision for planting a community, a church, a gathering of people that would be more than just a group of folks hanging out on a Sunday or whatever, but really focused around issues that would be connected with, you know, giving voice to the voiceless, helping the poor, the impoverished, the struggle. It seems like a lot of times churches have a tendency to kind of target kind of the demographically middle, and since nobody wants you know downward mobility, everybody wants upward mobility. Upward, you never really build programs or organizations tend not to focus much then on reaching down, or it's not even down. That's the wrong way to put it.
I would phrase
getting involved
on the front lines.
Yeah.
Where you're engaging that first person that they see.
Yeah, exactly. So that brings us all the way to current stuff, with skipping a lot of things, where 10 years ago, moving back down here with this plan to establish what is now Gather Church. We didn't know at the time whether it was going to be in Centralia, in Chehalis, in Rochester, in Olympia. I mean, there were times years before we moved down here where I thought it was going to be in Snohomish, Washington, honestly. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, I was in Snohomish real recently and saw one of the buildings we were looking at. And I was like, man, things have changed in this neck of the woods a lot since 10, 11 years ago when we were looking at space up there. But anyway, we ended up then, obviously, in Centralia. And things have, man, I'll tell you, it's good when God does not give us all of what is coming down the pipe for us, even when it's good, when we, you know, it's good not to know how many struggles and how many hard times you're going to have and many challenges you're going to face. We can only handle so much, you know. So anyway, that's kind of it in a nutshell as to how this brief overview of my life's journey.
No, that's good. Talk to us about your family. Any interests besides your family?
I'm not very interested in my family. They're all a bunch of losers.
No. I know, but I know you specifically have an interest.
So
I want your family, then tell us some interests.
Well, and it's very connected, my family and I. We're all pretty avid cyclists. Yeah, so let's see. Going all the way back to my grad school years, I started commuting by bike, and so that was like the beginnings of like a pretty passionate interest for me. And so it went from commuting to racing to getting my wife involved with riding and then racing. Mm-hmm. And I have a 14-year-old son and a 12-year-old son, and so they've grown up riding their whole lives. And so we have a few different cycling disciplines that are really key to our, I guess, family's success, if you will. You know, the things that are really healthy about our family dynamic are both connected with our love of God, but also this shared experience with cycling. I had a friend just before my eldest son was born who gave me some really good advice, and it was, don't eliminate all of the wonderful things or things that you enjoy doing from your life after your child is born, but rather try and figure out how to integrate them into these things that you love to do. Mm-hmm. Or else, like, he was just being blunt. He's like, you'll find maybe even a sense of resentment for your own child that you won't admit, right? Nobody wants to admit that stuff, but, like, you know, oh man, my son came along and I had to quit all the fun stuff I was doing. And I was like, I think that's what I would have done. I mean, I don't know about the resentment piece, but at least the, like, I would have quit doing things if it wasn't for that good piece of advice. And so, man, I'll tell you, from I think he had to be like a year old, and my oldest son's name is Noah. We could put him in a chariot carrier bike trailer thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And so just as soon as his neck muscles are strong enough to handle the, and we were like dragging him everywhere, and he'd just love it, man. He just,
to now where he's competing.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. So the whole family races bicycles, and primarily the sport we do together in racing is cyclocross. It's this weird geeky fall winter cycling event where you're riding a bike, looks like a road bike, but it's not, and you're riding it on the road, off the road, having to run with your bike and shoulder. It's crazy. If you've never looked it up, then check it out. It's pretty fascinating.
There's probably some videos.
Oh yeah.
In any falls at all for you? Any
injuries? My goodness, of course. Okay, yeah, right. Always.
And how many times have you done the STP, which is a Seattle to Portland?
Yeah, I've only done it a few times. Okay. But the first year I did it, I just did it with my buddy Dave. And he was he's an avid cyclist. He doesn't race, and he's like, I just need more of a reason to train, and we need more of a reason to ride together. And so he rides a lot, and we ride together and train for that. And then the next year, I decided that I was going to do it with my son, Noah, who was 6 at the time.
Yeah.
And so I throw him on our tandem, and rode it with him on the tandem.
Yeah.
And then the next year, so he's 7, and my youngest is 4. I put him on it's kind of like a fix-a-bike thing, but a little different than that. It's like a recumbent that attaches to the back of a bike.
Oh, yeah.
And
okay.
We throw that onto the tandem. And so it's 3 of us. And oh my goodness, it was so much fun.
We had
an absolute blast.
That would have been a good look.
Oh yeah. I think you can actually catch a video of us going someplace on the interwebs. Going across the finish line at Rose Garden or whatever it is in Portland. And it's pretty funny because if you listen closely to the announcer, both of my boys had really long blonde hair at the time. And so we're going across the finish line and the announcer's like, oh, look at this dad with his 2 daughters. And then, it was great. And then he's like, wait a second. Oh, I think those are sons. Those are his boys. I'm like, yeah, they're my boys. Anyway. Yeah, yeah. We had a blast, though.
Only because the boys were getting out of their carts going after them, right?
That's right, yeah, yeah, you know it. They're, like, throwing down. They're, like, that announcer.
So what's your wife's name?
Cat.
Cat.
It's Catherine.
Catherine.
She goes by Cat with a K, K-A-T. Okay. Yeah, don't get it wrong. She'll whoop you.
Well, no.
And she will.
And she could, too. I'll tell you.
I know. She's probably 5'1", 5'2"?
She's something like 5'3".
Yeah, 5'3".
4, maybe.
You probably can throw a pretty good punch.
Oh, yeah. If anybody is a mini, man, I'll tell you, for everybody that's met Kat, it doesn't take long to realize that she's like a force. I mean, small package, but I'll tell you what, she is an incredible woman. And I mean,
and I love her energy. She'll run circles around, of us.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, she's absolutely amazing. Got so much passion and is a her, like, people try and, she used to manage our clothing bank, and people show up thinking that they could keep up with her, and few people would, you know, make it for a day or so. Yeah, they come back the next day and they can't move.
Like, they're in the fetal position in the corner.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Right? Cool. Yeah, yeah.
So tell us a little bit more about Gather. Mm-hmm. What is Gather? What is, I know, obviously you're called Gather Church.
Mm-hmm.
But give us a little background on, because you've mentioned Gather a few times.
Yeah.
It's been 10 years.
It's been 10 years.
Yeah.
It's a church?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is it a place where you feed people? Is it a place where you get clothes? Is it a place where you get haircut? What's Gather?
Yeah, well, it's all those things, right? So I think from a maybe an ecclesiological standpoint, it's a church that has within it what is now, I guess, considered more of a volunteerism movement or a parachurch. So going all the way back to maybe 12 years ago, I was experiencing parachurch organizations being the like visible, tangible hands and feet of Jesus in communities. And then I found it odd that I was not experiencing that in churches. Right? And so there were opportunities where you would see, say, a ministry fair or something like that come into a church where parachurch organizations show up and you have booths set up or tables, and there are all these options for things that you could go and do. And there was, that was cool, and that is cool. It's great, right? But oftentimes people take flyers home and they put them aside and never really do anything.
They don't get them home.
Well, yeah, cool. Right? Okay, let's round file them on the way out. Yeah.
I'm just being honest.
Absolutely. So, I mean,
I'm the guy who cleans up after those mission fairs. I know exactly where they're
at. So this was my experience, right? And so I'm like, you know, where did this come from? Where did the working, tangible hands and feet of Christ become separated from daily, weekly church activity?
Yeah.
And we don't have time to get into all that history because I ramble on too much about nonsense. So, but anyway, it was like, okay, I think we have a problem, and part of what needs to happen in my perspective is, and I was certainly thinking that this very strongly then, is we need to reinvite this work, not all the scope of all the different specializations somebody could have in parachurch, but some of them back within the vibrant day-to-day life cycle of being the church.
Yeah.
And so it was kind of a, I don't know, reinfusing of this hands and feet parachurch within a church of vision. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of where, that's where a lot of this, of what now is Gather, was at least the thought process, the ecclesiology behind it. And so honestly, going back 10 years now, a little more, it was uncertain whether we would start off with what is more in the West traditionally at this point thought of as church activity of having a worship service and then allowing some of these other things to grow out of that, or whether we would start other programs that would be more traditionally thought of in our, well, in our context as parachurch things, and then let a church spill out of that. Now, going back to Bob Ekblad, my friend from Tierra Nueva, some of this was watching what happened with his organization, because they ended up started Tierra Nueva, which is really kind of parachurchy, and out of that birthed a church, because there were so many people that didn't connect other places for whatever reason, and they wanted to fellowship and they wanted to spend time together, and they wanted to worship together and such. And so it was unclear what direction we were going to go. We went, well, it was almost simultaneous, but we really went, first, let's start a kind of non-traditional but still somewhat traditional worship service, and then out of that we'll spill the other scopes of
aspects of
work.
Yeah.
So out of that, then, I think, you know, one of the first things that we knew we wanted to have was some kind of transitional living program for men, discipleship type program to help folks who were struggling to find the support they needed in recovery.
Yeah.
Alongside of that was food resources, because as much as we'd like it not to be the case, there's so much food insecurity in our country. It's just astronomical for how much food we just throw away every day in this country. It's just wild that there's that much food insecurity. So it's a matter of like being the conduit, getting it to the right people in the right ways, and then having additional just community resources for folks that are struggling to figure out how to navigate life and what goes on their daily struggle and figuring out how to take the next steps. So it wasn't long, and you know, it was really just 3 months in, and we had many of those pieces in place.
Yeah. So, well, and it was 5 years ago that when Elmer and I called you up and you know, just to come in and see what was going on at Gather, so 5 years ago it was renovating a portion of the building for childcare, and that's up and running now.
Yep.
And then also, it was you know, going upstairs and seeing, you know, the places, the place where these men were staying, and then some of them I think even just geographically, the situated where Gather is, you know, it's a block away from Centralia College. Mm-hmm. And then some of them were enrolled in some classes there, mm-hmm. As a part of recovery and, yeah. and having some skills that mm-hmm. could be marketable for work that mm-hmm. could help them in their recovery. So, and then, boy, we just kept wandering through. I don't know if you remember. I just kept wandering through, gathering. There was the food bank and the clothing closet, and then yeah, upstairs where the men were living, and then out in the dining hall, and the amount of meals that mm-hmm. serving throughout the week, and then how that has grown, and as in serving the community we live in. And I know Elmer, that then spurred on some other opportunities for bringing others along on that to come and be a part of what Gather has been doing.
That's one of the things that I love about when we're partnering with people, mm-hmm. when it's a community we're thinking about. Yeah. We're not thinking about who's here on Sunday morning, mm-hmm. what kind of tithe am I bringing in. Mm-hmm. You know, how am I going to get them into a small group where they're going to do absolutely nothing for Jesus? They're going to learn a lot about mm-hmm. him, but it doesn't transfer mm-hmm. into the action that I'm really, and Devin and I are passionate about, which yeah. is because I think that's the kingdom story. I you know, one of the things that we do now, not in the pandemic world, mm-hmm. but pre-pandemic, we started serving on Sunday, the fifth Sunday of the month,
yeah.
and we call it family dinner. And mm-hmm. so my wife, Tammy, and I, we host a meal at our home, and we have people come over. And then what we do on the fifth mm-hmm. Sunday of the month, we want to share a family dinner at Gather with those of you, those who come, mm-hmm. not and it's because we want them to fix a meal that we would have in our house. Mm-hmm. And so what we tell them is, hey guys, you are just an extension of us tonight. Thanks for hanging out with us. And I do miss that, by the way. I mean, yeah. Obviously we've been faithful to serve during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. I mean, basically I grab Judy and I do it together. I make the meal at the church, but I'm looking forward to us when we can gather yeah. again.
Well, so that brings to mind something that's really important to how I understand this journey and why some of the connection between the tangible hands and feet of Jesus in church that I guess maybe I assume is going to, people are going to connect these dots that not necessarily true. So we, as the people of God, just as human image bearers of God Almighty, we need each other.
Yeah.
And it's not so much this person's poor and this person's wealthy kind of need. It's whatever our socioeconomic status is, we need one another.
Yeah.
We need to have engagement for our own growth with somebody that's maybe living on the street, having our eyes opened to what amazing people live in circumstances that are less than desirable. Mm-hmm. And learning to like just let go of even viewing people that way as socioeconomic status, but rather just as humans with life experiences, with journeys, yeah. with hopes and dreams, with failures and successes, with all of what we all have, right? Like yeah. all of like this stuff that's inside of us that maybe some of us are afraid sometimes to like even talk about or share. We like that's going on in everybody, you know, maybe mm-hmm. the random sociopath doesn't think much about what's going on inside, but like we all have those kinds of emotions and struggles and things that we have to face. And when we have going back to the still looking past this, but when we have a broad socioeconomic diverse group of people that we know, we become better, more well-rounded human beings yeah. and better disciples. Yeah. You look at the kind of people that Jesus spent time with, and it's everybody, mm-hmm. you know, it's from religious leaders to government leaders to not always by choice with his government leaders, right?
But, right.
But with to prostitutes, mm-hmm. to
lepers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, And I would say it seems as though Jesus gravitates to the powerless and the voiceless and the downtrodden. But there's this eclectic group of people Jesus can talk with and have a relationship with. Mm-hmm. And, you know, however one is understanding Jesus' formation as a human being, those things are influencing, as he is fully man, just yeah. as we are fully human, that his formation is that's happening in him. Like sometimes it's easy to look past and just think that Jesus just showed up with a full perspective of everything right off the day when he was born or whatever, right? Little baby Jesus over right. there, you know, like, you know, spitting out platitudes or whatever. But it's like, you know, he was what it's described that Jesus grew strong in spirit. And so he was formed and grew and had life experiences and understanding and shaped by what was going on in the world around him and relationships that he had. Yeah. And he then lived out this faithfulness to his Father in those relationships. And we should, we have that same opportunity.
Yeah,
but instead we have a tendency to just like, you know, close off our world for whatever reason, and not we don't necessarily like to get to know people who aren't just like us, which means we'll stay just like we are most likely if we're only spending time with people just like us.
Right. Well, yeah. isn't that the truth? I mean, yeah. if we close ourselves off, we don't like you mentioned, the just the being able to be well-rounded, having eyes to see people who are not like me and don't look like me, mm-hmm. or have a different background and story than me, that am I willing or putting myself in a place where I'm even seeing them, mm-hmm. And even seeing them as, look, this is a creation of God here.
Yeah.
This person has been created by God, put here, and do I have eyes to see?
This podcast is produced by Ian Goodell, and if you would like to contact us, visit formjourney.com as well as Facebook and Instagram. We would love to hear your kingdom stories, and thanks for listening. God bless.